Welcome. I'm Halcyon. This is Hug Nation. This is the first Hug Nation since I returned from Burning Man 2018. Burning Man has been over for over a week, but after the burn, I went to Reno for several days and then drove back to San Diego and then have been decompressing. So this is the first Monday since Burning Man that I have been lucid enough and connected enough and have enough digital access to go live. I did do a talk or a Facebook Live earlier in the week where we just kind of did ask me anything about Burning Man, and I talked about that. But this is the first Hug Nation, so welcome everyone who is here coming in live, and welcome everyone who is watching this archive. Burning Man was incredible this year. But it was the 2018 Burning Man. I think that if you get into the habit of trying to compare Burning Man of 20 years ago to Burning Man of today, you will struggle and have all sorts of ways that you can make negative and positive comparisons. And people tend to want to do that. I don't find it to be very helpful. If there's things about early burns that you are nostalgic for, usually it's when I hear people that have never been to Burning Man that say, I wish I went back in the day when it was still cool, or before it was sold out, or, you know, when it was still, something I hear people say is like, you know, when it was still like the original purpose. And I'm like, the original purpose? You gotta do your history and read about what the original purpose of Burning Man was. No, it wasn't like some manifesto. It was a bunch of people just letting everyone else do their thing, and it grew into Burning Man. And I think that, you know, and I have spent a lot of energy over the last 20 years trying to shape what Burning Man is and trying to actually create a tone for it. You know, a lot of the things that I broadcast and share and cultivate in Burning Man culture having to do with the connection and family and love, and those are not inherently part of Burning Man or the Ten Principles, but I do believe the Ten Principles can foster that. Radical inclusion, radical self-expression, immediacy, these are all principles that foster the intimacy and the connection and the wide-scale family experience that that so many people have at Burning Man, and the heart-opening experience. But in and of itself, Burning Man is not a heart-opening experience. It's not, that's not the original intention. It just is one of the byproducts of community. So, all that being said, my experience this year had a few core or significant elements to it. By far, the most important and significant and time-consuming and impactful part of my burn was my camp experience. Pink Heart, this was our ninth year, and we had 92 people, which is on the small side for us. We've gone as high as, I think, 125. We try to keep it under 100 because we find that over 100, you start to kind of dissipate responsibility, and over 100, you start to have thoughts like, somebody else will get that, somebody else will pick that up, somebody else will man the water bar. And so under 100, I think the ownership is much tighter, so we try to keep it at that. Now, it does mean there's a lot more labor, especially considering we keep doing more and more, and our frontage was bigger this year, and we had more hours at the water bar, and we had more. But we did a bunch of things wrong this year, and I might get into that a little bit. We did mostly things right. One thing that I showed up on Friday at the burn, and by that time our camp was almost entirely built. Our build team had got there on Wednesday and had been just kicking ass. One thing, this year was a lot cooler than last year. Last year, trying to build in 110 degrees is grueling. But it was, you know, upper 80s and windy, and so it was a lot cooler for people to construct. Now, the wind can be a struggle. It's hard to put up, you know, big tarps and such in the wind, but I'll take wind over high temperatures any day. And so the Pink Heart build group they separate it into teams. So there's a team that does frontage, there's a team that does lighting, there's a team that does the dome, there's a team that sets up the shower, there's a team that sets up the kitchen area and the you know, private space. And there's something really magical that happens in these teams, because we don't have, Pinkheart doesn't have like a manual of like what camp is supposed to look like. Now, we do have a manual. We have a branding manual, and we have a manual for our procedures and our policies and a manifesto and things like that, and our mission statement. But we don't have a this is how you build Pinkheart. This is what it looks like. So when people get there, we unload our two storage containers that live in Nevada and are dropped off at our location via GPS, and then we unload massive amounts of shade structures and tarps and fabric like crazy and lights, and then we have the build team has a structure of how things are going to be set up, and then people fill it in as they are inspired to do so. And I think that there's something very significant about that. And it's different than the way some camps and art cars, for example, work. Sometimes there is a visionary who has a concept of what everything's supposed to be, and then they assign people jobs to do exactly what you're supposed to do. And you can like look at a picture and make it work, you know, make sure it looks like that. And what Pinkheart has done is more like crafting day at kindergarten, and we have this table full of supplies, you know, where it's fabric and lights and you know, lanterns and all sorts of stuff that we add over the years, more and more and more stuff, and then people on the teams just keep becoming inspired to make things look closer and closer to a what they believe to be a beautiful, warm, inviting, loving pink dream. And so, you know, years ago, as when I helped start the camp, we created this momentum and this direction and this vision of what the vibe and the idea that we wanted to do. And since then, people, as they join our group and they join the family spelled PH, Pinkheart, as they start to get it, then they're empowered to create. And so the whole concept of Pinkheart is really, what do you want to add to this? What do you want to, what are you inspired? What's some magic in you that will make this better? And it's the same concept as Burning Man. We just do it on our theme camp scale. And so over the years, there's so much different, you know? Now we have, like, we now have meals as part of, we have a dinner. Because some people, their art is cooking, and so they wanted to share that with the camp. And we have, we had a mural this year that Legume, our amazing French artist, she created this massive mural on the side of our camp that you may have seen if you go down the 4 o'clock road this year right in front of the Hugmobile. There was this beautiful mural that she created. And you know, that wasn't a part of Pinkheart vision, but that was a way for a Pinkhearter to contribute their energy, their heart, their love in the direction that Pinkheart is heading. And we learned a lot this year about how important that concept is. Because one thing that happened this year is that, you know, in after 9 years, there's a lot of, you try different things and you know, one thing that we've done is we've gotten better and better and better at things over the years. And so sometimes when we think that we're getting good at something, it's tempting to be attached to a certain plan. And when we get too attached to a plan, then when a new person comes in, rather than that same concept of like, hey, go in this direction and add it to what you want, instead they're given a assignment that is has boundaries to it and constrictions to it. And what we discovered this year is as we got too many assignments, too many shifts, you work this for this many hours, work this for this many hours, do bike parking for this many hours, do this for this many hours, which is all the things that were required to make the camp work. But in the past, we did it as much more organic, like, hey, we need help up at the water bar. This year, we had assignments and shifts. And so this very like joyful experience that we have had in the past of contributing our love and our art and our time and our resources towards this magical gift started to feel a little bit more like work. And it started to feel like an obligation, and it started to feel like it didn't feel good to give it. It more felt like bad if you didn't. It wasn't a gift, it was an obligation. And it's the same action, but the story around it changes everything. And one of my huge learnings from this year's burn was how significant the culture around our camp and Burning Man matters. And that how good it feels to do massive effort and massive work when you are gifting, when you're contributing, when you are given an opportunity to use your energy and your efforts and your talents towards something that you believe matters. It feels awesome, and it doesn't feel like work at all if you have to do it. If you are a cog, if you are, you know, if you're not given choice or power and instead are just said, someone tells you this is important, therefore do this. Or even maybe don't even tell you it's important, just says, if you want to be in this camp, you have to do that. And we weren't that bad, but just like the subtle difference makes a huge difference. And so one of the first things that I did on camp this year was touch base with a lot of the leadership and kind of recalibrate and recorrect and make sure and try to understand what had happened in certain elements of our camp. And I think that it really helped to get everybody aware of what was going on and what had caused some dip in the overall joy that is generally the experience. And so it was also a good reminder that Burning Man in general is a iterative city. You know, one of the things that makes it so such a hotbed for learning and for innovation is that the city is rebuilt every year. And so if something works, you do it again. If something doesn't work, you don't do it the next year, because there's no legacy. There's no, you know, the streets don't stay, you rebuild them. So if they don't work, you change them. Same with everything, whether it's structure or decor or music or water bar or any of those things. And you try new things. And if they don't, like this year we used to own our own big water, what are they called? I don't know, like those like 250 gallon things. But we store them every year and it's expensive. So this year we decided we would work with a vendor that rented us these water containers. And with that, we also got these electric pumps that made it so much easier to pump water, and they would fill the water all the time. And it was just, we're still in the process of going back over and reviewing things that happened this year. But that was an example of something where we tried something new, and I think it worked awesome. It's very possible. Totes, that's what they're called. Thank you, Amber. If you have any questions about water, ask Amber. And the city does this, and our camp does this, and I think, and people do this. You know, you try, you put up together an outfit, and then you get the dangly cool thing you made gets caught in your bike spokes, and you're like, okay, this is a bad idea. I'm not gonna do this next year. Or, you know, you glue something, and then it melts, and the pieces fall off, and you make moop, and you're like, that was a bad idea. I'm not gonna do that again. Or you get a frozen neck thing that you get cold and put on your neck, and you put in the heat of the day, and you go, dude, this works great. And next year you bring two of them so you can swap them out in your cooler and put a cold thing on your neck and walk around. And the same is true with the structures and the policies and the procedures that our camp, on any camp, tries to put together. And I think for me, a huge part of this year was learning how important camp dynamics are and how important individual passion is and the interactions between people and the empowerment between people and how exponentially incredible a group project can be when the individuals in it are given power to blossom and grow and fail. And that was a huge part of it too. It was that we had to allow ourselves to mess up. So that was one of the kind of like, when we have our big camp meeting on Monday, which is like one of the highlights of my week. It's the only time we all sit together with 92, all the campmates together. And And we've gotten so good at so many things that I felt it was important to give ourselves permission to mess up. You know, we are the kind of camp that with the organ, if you know, if Rangers come by and say, you guys need to do this, we're like, we're right on it. And we want to be. We want to be a exemplary camp. But sometimes the pressure we put on ourselves leads us to that obligation place or that work feeling, because if you mess up and you're afraid of messing up, that's a different feeling than joyfully doing. And so I think for me at least, just shifting the perspective of like, it's not that big a deal if we run out of water, or it's not that big a deal if we get a second reminder about blocking the street. Now, we don't want to block the street, but if the price of never having bikes in the street is that we have people in the camp that are frustrated and resentful, then that's a problem. And we should find a way to scale back what we're doing. Maybe we shouldn't be on the Esplanade or we shouldn't have ice cream as many days, because it puts such a burden on people. And life is full of burdens. Burning Man should be joyful. And it's that rare place where you can build your dreams. And if building your dreams is stressful and resentful, I'm not sure if that's... I think Abraham Hicks says that you cannot get to a joyful destination via an unjoyful journey. And so much of Burning Man is the journey. So recalibrating in such a way that we can make sure that the journey is fun was an important reminder for me this year. So the camp was a huge part of my joy. So I spent a ton of time at our camp, walking around the frontage, relaxing, meeting people that were coming to our camp, walking around and hosting people, talking to people that were alone, talking to people that were, you know, in groups, giving them little gifts and answering questions and trying to be silly. I just love, I mean, basically we created Pink Heart because it's like my dreams come true. It's literally the dreams come to life. And so, of course, I spent a lot of time there. I did try to see more art this year, and as always, did a terrible job. There was one piece of art that I fell in love with that I visited several times. And anytime I like developed a new friendship with someone, I said, hey, let's go check out the Hexatron. And I put up a video that you can see in my feed demonstrating the Hexatron. It was 400 and something 20-foot light poles. And they were programmed so elegantly. It just gave you this, it was like going on a journey. And it just kept changing. It was no repeating. It just felt like, and one thing that was cool, a lot of people never knew this, these poles, they would change colors and patterns, and it looked like stars, and it looked like a forest. And they also made little sounds. But usually there were so many art cars around there that you couldn't hear them. So a little commentary going on in chat about like the resentful feeling of, and this has been a part of Burning Man, and my burns and my camp experiences since the beginning for me. There's always people that do more work. And then there's always people that feel resentful that they're doing more than others. And if you get attached to the idea that it needs to be fair, you are gonna suffer. Which is one of the reasons why I talk about adjusting our objective in a way that makes sure that we're all doing what we wanna joyfully do. If no one is excited about working the water bar 24/7, then we should not offer a water bar 24/7. We should do less. We should do less to the point that we're all acting joyfully. And if we feel like there's people that don't love what we're doing enough that they don't want to work at all, then they're probably not a good fit for the camp. We should decide this is what we all want to do and we love it. And if people want to do more, then they do more. I mean, that's why we have a lot of like these little projects where people, baseline is here, and then some people want to add this. They want to give away cookies. They want to make a mural. They want to do, you know, make a gift, they want to, or they, and you're doomed. And this, I've seen this over and over and over and over and over with people. There's certain people that feel like if something is not being done, they need to do it. And then they get resentful that no one else did it. And that just doesn't work, you know? I guess if there's like safety issues, but otherwise, I think you have to decide that I'm gonna contribute as much as I can joyfully do. And if that's not enough, then we need to reduce our offerings. And maybe that's a year by year thing. Maybe you can't make that decision midweek. And maybe you need to have a camp meeting and talk to people and say, hey, it feels like nobody wants to, it feels like we all agreed that we were going to serve drinks at sunset, and it feels like no one is here at sunset. Am I wrong? Is that an accurate thing that we don't want to do that? Because if I take it on myself and I'm the one at the bar every sunset, then I feel resentful and I feel like, you know, it's unfair. So I think communication is important. And I also think that it's important. Let me say that again. So I think communication is critical. I was very lucky that someone in my camp, on the way to the burn, we drove together, and he, you know, for like 4 or 5 hours, he told me some things that he felt were problematic within our camp. Things that I had done, things that I had not done, and it was very hard to hear. But after, you know, a 3-hour nap on the side of the road and thinking about it and realizing it was a lot of these things that I was talking about the difference between an obligation versus joyful giving. And I was so grateful that he said something. And I was aware that there were people in camp that were having these feelings and not saying anything. And so in our camp meeting, I made sure that I expressed that this is a duocracy. And if you're feeling resentful, you got to say something. If you're feeling like that you don't like the direction, you got to say something. You got to love the organization. You got to love your campmates. You got to love Burning Man enough to try to fix things that you think are broken. To just, you know, be upset or to, you know, talk about it in grumbling, you know, quiet conversations, that is a disservice, and that's how things die. That's how magic fades. And having enough love to say the hard stuff. And that's true in a camp, that's true in a relationship, that's true in a friendship, that's true in a business. You know, I got this advice, you know, from a poly person last year that you gotta get comfortable saying things that people don't wanna hear. And that is one of the best advice I've ever received. And it applies to a camp and applies in everything in life. Because if you think that you're avoiding discomfort, you think you're avoiding awkwardness, and what you're really doing is fostering walls. You're creating obstacles to truth and connection, and you're saying, I don't trust our love for each other enough for you to be able to hear what I'm saying, and you're not going to be able to hear my concern. And I think that you will this truth that I'm experiencing, you are going to judge me for it. And therefore, I'm going to keep my truth from you. And that is the path to reduced love, reduced connection, reduce everything. I mean, it's way harder than it sounds, but that's why Burning Man is such a cool practicing ground. And that's why, you know, relationships are a good practicing ground. This is what life is for, right? To find your edges, to find the places of discomfort, these are the classrooms for your human experience. And one of the reasons why Burning Man is so valuable and so life-changing for people is because it's hard. And it provides you all of these rare opportunities in terms of personal expression and interpersonal relationships that give you these challenges. I mean, whether it's dust storms literally or dust storms, you know, in your self-doubt and dust storms in your relationships, these storms that knock you off kilter, it's the process of righting yourself or realizing what is going wrong that as you get to the other side of it, you're like, I'm better, I'm stronger, I'm a better person. And this burn was absolutely for me. I felt like at the end of the week, I'm like, I'm a better person than I was 2 weeks ago. You know, I have faced some weaknesses. I have gone through some difficult situations. I've had some hard conversations. And is everything perfect? No, absolutely not. But do I feel in integrity? And do I feel like I pushed myself through places that I did not want to go? Yes. And that is the journey of personal growth and of being a human. You know, one thing that was different for me this year is waiting for me on the other side of Burning Man was the launching of my coaching program, The Pink Path, that if you watch here, you've probably heard me talk about a lot because I was very excited about it. It's a huge step for me to be doing it. And so my launch of it is Wednesday this week. And so knowing that I had this huge project on the other side of the burn affected things in some way. And so I was a little bit more connected in some ways, in some times, to default world thoughts than I sometimes am in the past. Sometimes I'm just like I have no concept of what non-Burning Man life is like. But this year I was thinking about it a lot because there's so much overlap for me in what I want to be coaching and teaching and helping people with what happens at Burning Man. And it's really authenticity coaching. And for me, Burning Man was the thing that gave me the support and the tools and the reflections to have the courage to be more authentic. And so these are the lessons that I've been trying to shape into this Pink Path program. And what's been so awesome is, you know, as always, Burning Man reminded me, powerfully so, of how important authenticity is and how the world needs people to be who they are. You know, we cannot solve the problems of the world with the same thinkings that created them. And I believe that it is when people are tuned in to their truth and allowing their inspiration out is when we get the solutions that the world needs, whether they're tiny solutions like being the supportive parent that gives a troubled youth the ear that they need, or big solutions like, oh my gosh, this medical device could go like this and it could save lives. And it is when we are working from our inner gifts rather than our intellectual logic places that these transformational, monumental, exponential leaps in progress happen. And I think that Burning Man helps that happen. And a huge part of that is, I've heard people call Burning Man a permission engine. And that there's such a huge thing that happens when you go from your whole life of doing what you think you should do, you've given this input, this data of what you're supposed to do, and you try to do it to stay in line, you try to, you know, to succeed, you're going, you should do, and suddenly you're given permission to do what you feel like doing. Whoa! And the energy comes from a totally different place. And the given permission is so significant. It's what you see out there when people do this insane things. It's there's nothing logical about it. It's simply allowing this energy, this inspiration, this divine something to happen. And once you start letting it out, it's almost like you open up the pipeline to that creative force. And my professional desires in the Pink Path and in Hug Nation and in, you know, I want to be an agent of permission for people. I don't think I can save anybody, help anybody, teach anybody anything. I think that I can give people permission because you need it. We need it. And we don't have Burning Man year round. And so we need to have communities and people and web broadcasts and reminders that we have permission until we can remember it ourselves and know that, wait, I know I keep being told what I should do. I keep getting these marketing messages of what I should be, but that's, I get permission to be who I am. And when I do that, boom, that's when the magic happens. You may have seen, I posted a video today that was a college humor video about, it was a fake ad for whiskey. And it was it's like, I'm a macho guy. When I'm not shaving with a chainsaw, I reach for, you know, Macho Jacks. And as the commercial keeps going, the guy, you know, the macho guy starts to question. And he goes, wait a minute. He goes, I would pick, of course I'm going to take whiskey over this Cosmopolitan. And the narrator starts going, yeah. And then the guy's like, wait a minute. I've never had a Cosmopolitan. That's weird. Like, he goes, no, he goes, whoa, actually, I'm afraid of ordering a Cosmopolitan. I'm afraid of people judging me. And the narrator's like, no, that's pussy shit. You don't want that. He goes, no. I'm afraid to like order a pink drink. I'm afraid of anything. I don't own anything pink. And the narrator's like, yeah, of course you don't. He's like, am I afraid of a color? He's like, it's so good. I highly recommend you check it out. It's like, you know, when people ask me why I am so attached to pink, it's exactly that there was a time when I became aware of how powerful the shoulds were of what I was supposed to be as a man. And that just like became so crazy and ridiculous that there was this color that I actually liked, but I was not allowed to like it because that would mean that the script that I've been giving of what I should do, you know, would be broken and I would betray this should. And so when I gave myself permission, when Burning Man gave me permission to just let myself be, pink became a symbol of that, of like, of fuck the shoulds, fuck the scripts. And it allowed me to give that messaging as I walk through the world. And people go, whoa, you shouldn't have pink hair. Like, wait, are you, you're not gay? Then why, you shouldn't have that. And it's like, okay, think about what you're saying. Think about how insane that is. Who's, and I think that that is one of the fundamental freedoms of a supportive community, of Burning Man, of cosplay, or whatever, is that when you have, when you are allowed to, when you're given permission to be who you are. And when you're in that place and you can make that switch, it's so much easier. It's so much more relaxing than trying to be what you should, because then you're constantly at risk of failing, constantly at risk of not being what you're supposed to be. But if you just are given permission to be yourself and you let that out, you can't fail. People can judge you, but it's insane. It's insanity. So other things at Burning Man. I had a bunch of really powerful teaching experiences from some people in my camp, and specifically some men in my camp. You know, I've been, you know, as I'm talking here about masculine and pink and stuff, I definitely was inspired by women. But there was a few men in my camp that gave me like role modeling behaviors that was really valuable to me. I struggle with giving, you know, respect to people enough to let them be my role models or mentors. And there was two people specifically that I had these long conversations with and interactions with that I just, I was humbled, and to the point that I felt like just watching them, actually more than a lot of, there was Carpo, there's Cookie, there's Devin. And one of the things that I like, I had some interactions with Cookie, who's, Anthony's this very powerful man and very successful man. And at times he has been a mentor to me in terms of, he's taught me things about, web stuff. And he's way smarter and way more educated. And so he was a teacher to me in these places. And in many things in the world, he's a teacher to me. But at the Burn, there were times when, you know, when I'm in charge and he goes from being super alpha to my lieutenant, boom. And I knew that he would do whatever I needed. And the feeling that I had, you know, I often have struggle asking for help, and having a powerful person being like, no second guessing, you tell me what you need, like I will make it happen. And like, it made me so much more effective. And it also, to see somebody do that and stay so powerful, you know, like he was at service, he was of service to what we're doing. And in this chain of command, I was the one in control. I was in charge. So I don't think I'm explaining this well, but I'd never experienced that before in that way, you know, in the way that, like, I did not have to sweet talk and softly share what my needs were. We were boom, like it was established, like I'm making the shots, we're making this happen. And I didn't, it was not, there was no tact required. It was like, the trust was so deep, you know? And I learned in through that process that, you know, that what that can mean, and what it can mean to lean on somebody, and what, you know, how I want to be someone that could be leaned on as well. And that there is not, that's not a power, you know, there's no weakness to supporting someone from a place of service. It's like, I learned a ton from that. And I felt like I became a better leader and a better follower, or maybe not follower is the wrong word, but teammate. Another huge part of this Burn was the temple and Nick. I've talked about Nick, my campmate who killed himself several months ago. And I thought that I had processed it a lot. And I thought that I was kind of like almost dreading. I knew there was going to be so many things that were going to go on at the Burn with our camp. And Rima made this cool altar for him. And I was kind of like, fuck, do I really want to go return to all this sadness and grieving when I felt like I really processed this a lot and come through on the other side? And some of the most beautiful, powerful, awesome experiences that I had at the Burn this year was grieving. We had this heart altar that Rima made in our camp for several days. And then I think Wednesday, Thursday, we brought it to the temple. And the first time that I went out to the temple, it was closed for most of the week. But so on Thursday, I think, was when I first got there. And the heart was right in front of the temple. And it's interesting, I've heard some people say that they did not resonate with the temple. And I thought it just was so fucking awesome. It was like a volcano shape, but it was geometric. It was like a twisted pyramid, sort of like arcing tornado, or not tornado, a volcano, maybe a tornado, an upside down tornado. And my experience of it was that you as you walk in, it's very personal, and it's in your face, and you see all the pictures and the writing and the altars, and it's just like, and then you go into the center, so it's like right in you, and it's very visceral, and then you get in the center, and it goes swooshes up, and it just like takes the energy, like almost like an ancient cathedral, you know, like when you get into that huge space and the stained glass and the huge cathedral, and it's just like there's something ethereal and so much bigger than you that just overwhelms you. And I felt like this shape had that thing where it anchored you to the reality of all these suffering and grief, and then it also took you, and in the middle it had these like globes that were like tears dropping down, and I had two significant experiences there that I would call ecstatic grief, and it's something that I now look forward to it every year. The temple has taught me to see grief in a different way, where I don't feel like grief is bad in any way. I feel like it is one of the rare opportunities to feel powerfully alive and to feel a love. Because the when you feel loss in that profound way, it's what you're feeling is the absence of the love. So the more powerful the grief is a reminder of how more powerful the love was. And so when I go into the temple and I see all these memories and all these thoughts and all this grief, what I see is just this like the best of humanity and the most powerful experiences of being a human that you can have, and it just starts to overwhelm me, and I love it. And so when I first saw the tribute to Nick, it was this beautiful heart like 4 feet tall, and I'd already written in it, but I sat in front of it, and in front of it there's a picture of him with the starlight that we sometimes have at our camp. So it makes little heart, it makes little hearts in your pupils. And he's like, and I just sat in front of it and looked at him, and in this space place, you know, and I felt so close to him, and I felt so grateful. Luckily, the night before, we do a thing at a sit down dinner called Grace, where it's like cloth tablecloths, and you get served. We break bread together, warm bread, and then we have this multi-course meal. And at the end of the meal, Rod in our camp said, "Hey, I feel like really called to talk about Nick." And I was like, "Oh, you know," because at this point I'm like, "This is a really joyous dinner. Should we really bring it down?" And then I realized, of course, you know, if someone's called to do this, and so Rod actually early in the week he gave me these chimes that I rang before every meal to do grace. And so at the end of the meal, I rang them to kind of quiet the group, because we have a huge mess hall. And then Rod shared a story about Nick, and then people just started sharing story after story. And it was so awesome to hear all of these beautiful memories that people had. You know, a lot of my memories of Nick are that he was a big-hearted asshole. I love him, but, you know, he was a difficult person. And so to hear all of these moments of sweetness and all of these people who had these just transformative experiences with him. And so then that was the Thursday night. And so then Friday when I was at the temple and communing with his spirit, you know, it was so powerful. And I just, you know, and I feel so safe there, you know. Like there was a time, like Jason Silva just posted a video about it. He went to the temple and he put on goggles and a mask because he wanted to grieve privately, and which makes sense. But I am now at a place in my vulnerability and transparency where I feel very comfortable, and in fact I almost feel like it's like part of what I'm here to do is grieve publicly and give people permission. So, but in this place, I was so looking forward to this ecstatic grief and just went down on my knees and just was wailing. And and somebody came and they held me and they said, "You're so beautiful when you cry," which I thought was the right thing to say, you know? It was, and then someone else, they said, "It's gonna be okay," and they held me. And I was kind of like, I totally understand what you mean, and I totally understand the sentiment, but it is okay. Like, it's perfect, you know? I am so grateful that I had Nick in my life. I'm so grateful that I have this place to grieve. I'm so grateful I have this community. I'm so grateful that I have this moment. I'm so grateful. Like, it's gonna be okay. It is okay. It's fucking perfect. And then after, you know, crying for like 20 minutes, I got up, I walked out of the temple, and I felt so light and so cleansed and so like reborn. And I really think that like if all Burning Man was the temple, it would still be worth all the effort I put into it, all the time, all the money, all everything. That those temple experiences are so significant to me. It's almost like after, like when I finally leave, I'm like, well, I guess I'll go do something awesome. But really, I feel like I got the price of my ticket is paid for. Like that was a peak experience of my life. So I guess I'll go get a snow cone. So the temple, it's a shame that we do not have it in the default world, these places for powerful grieving to be more accepted. And maybe it is, maybe there are people, like some faiths, but like I know when I went to the church service for Nick, I was holding it in. Like I wanted to cry, and I felt like it wasn't acceptable. I mean, I was crying, but I wanted to wail. I wanted to snot. I wanted to release and just allow and give myself permission to feel and express. And I did not feel that that's was the way the church dynamic was. Other things this year. Yeah, I mean, I guess those were the big ones. The camp, the lessons from human beings and team stuff, the Hexatron art piece, the temple, and then just all the little magic interactions with people, meeting people. I mean, it's hard for me to spend any time, you know, a lot of time doing anything at the Burn, or like I had several date nights with my partners, and those were awesome. But at the same time, it's hard for me to dedicate a whole night with one person because there's so many people that I want to meet there. There's 70,000 amazing people that I want to meet. And so that's one of the reasons why I hang out at camp, is so I can meet people, because the art is amazing, but my favorite art pieces are the human beings. We had a new beacon this year, and Kiwi, we had two artists that worked on it, Kiwi and Craig. Kiwi did the building, and Craig did the lights. And watching Craig work on the lights gave me this massive appreciation for LED art and how hard it is. Craig could not get it completed, you know, by Tuesday, so we had a backup plan that Kiwi implemented. But watching him try to debug and program the interactive stuff and the animations within LEDs, it's not like people build the rainbow bridge and then just say, program, make it look pretty. I mean, you have to map every dot and you have to tell everything what to do at every time. It's just like insane. Yeah, the Hexatron was so elegant and so I was just marveled at it. And I kept coming back to it. And I would meet somebody and say, ooh, let me show you this. Let me show you this. Oh, the pink ride, I forgot to mention. This year, the pink ride was not in the book. None of our activities, the pink ride activities, got into the Who, What, Where book, which is unusual. That's never happened before. I know that it was submitted, so I'm not sure what happened. So it was not as big a crowd as in past years. I mean, it was still a couple hundred people, but I thought it would be bigger than years past, which we, you know, it was, and it was a little bit smaller. And the ice cream was also not in the book, so we had smaller crowds at the ice cream, which is kind of cool. That means the only people that show are people that know that it's there, or the people that stumble on it. And I believe Burning Man is a much better experience when you stumble upon things than if you map out. I mean, it's fine to have a destination, but only as an excuse to get in motion and then let the magic happen. So the pink ride is, it's always my highlight of the year, and it was pretty magical again. Had a great group of people. We had a really huge frontage this year, and so I arranged myself in a different way in the past. I shared some of the things that I talked about here today, about Nick and about our camp and about, you know, places that I'm at in my life and lessons from Burning Man and lessons from my grandpa. And then we did the pink ride and to center camp. And, you know, there's, I'm hoping that I can get some footage or people, I saw people that were filming, but the experience of looking back and seeing pink as far as I can see, hundreds of people in pink, and hearing them say, I love you, I love you, I love you, to everyone we pass is, it's so surreal. It's like, I feel so lucky, you know, that I put this thing in motion and people respond to it. And then it's also so powerful to see how it affects people. You know, it is bigger than I can explain. You know, when people are in a group of a couple hundred people all saying, I love you, and then you go into center camp and become part of this single expression of love, and you take over center camp, this symbol of this city that means so much, and you just tint it pink and you shower it with love, and you're a part of it, and you're bringing people into it, and you're just radiating this love, and you're given permission to do so powerfully. I think that for some people it's like, whoa, I've never felt that permission to love so hard and to shower love on strangers so, you know, universally. And contrary to what you might think, it's empowering. You know, it resets your definition of yourself. It's like, oh, I can do this. I can open my heart this big, and it just makes me feel like I have a bigger heart. It doesn't diminish me in any way. And it's so cool to see people come back year after year after year and bring their friends, and then people come for the first time and be like, I don't know what it was, but that was the highlight of my burn. And so it was magical again. I'm so grateful. Really, you know, Pink Heart and the Pink Ride are very much, you know, parts of the same expression. And, you know, it, for me, that's, for some people, Burning Man is nothing, has nothing to do with open-heartedness. But for me, it's you know, if I'm going to give permission to express what I want to be and am, it's that. We were on a different side of the city this year. We were at 4 o'clock Esplanade. We were up until the previous 8 years of Pink Heart, we were at between 9 and 7:30 Esplanade. Always been Esplanade because we're kind of designed for that. But we've always been on that side of the city, and so we did not choose to be on the side of the city, but they mixed up a lot of things. We actually were flipped with Thunderdome. We were in their old spot, they're in our old spot. And it was fun to be in a new place and have new neighbors, although we flipped with Trifecta, so we were still next door to Trifecta. Behind us was Loveland, which is great, one of my favorite camps, who also has a heart beacon. And there was another heart beacon that was like a block away. So it was like three, it was like the heart district. We would say, it's heart to miss us. It was fun, and it was nice to be a place where, like, I couldn't take for granted things. You know, I'm very familiar with our old location, and I kind of know my way around. And so this was kind of fun to be a little lost and like a traveler in a new place. I think that if I had a choice, I would go back. But either they're both fun and beautiful. I can't tell how long I've been talking, but So the Burning Man was for me was fantastic. I'm still decompressing. I still have not uploaded all my pictures or edited my videos, and as I'm preparing for the Pink Path to get started on Wednesday, I'm realizing that I need to refocus. Luckily, there's so much overlap for me in terms of the lessons of Burning Man and permission and authenticity. So much of what the burn reminds me is also what I'm hoping to create. Oh my gosh, we've gone 55 minutes and we haven't had a hug. So let's do a Hug Nation hug. Thank you for the time check-in. So wherever you are, grab yourself by the shoulders and give a moment to be grateful for this body, this sensation machine, this spaceship that takes you through this fertile world and allows you to witness the unfolding of the universe. What a gift to have this body. But let's remember that it's just a shell. It's just a spaceship. And inside that spaceship, inside is the next level layer of yourself, which is your thoughts and your personality traits and the jerseys you wear and the opinions you hold. Mets fan, American, Christian, atheist, pink lover. But all of these things are just another layer, another level, another type of shell. It makes the world fun, it gives it some drama, but it also makes us separate from others. Sure, that's fun. Soccer's no fun if there's just one team. Soccer's fun when there's two teams. But whenever you start to feel like the other team is your enemy and you hate them, or you make yourself sick with stress, you gotta remember, it's just a game. And beneath the jerseys is your truth. The energy that flows through you, the love that flows through all of us, that makes us all connected and all one. And so for three breaths, let's just be that oneness. Allow ourselves to just be cells of a massive cosmic organism. As we inhale through the nose and out through the mouth, ready? In. Last one. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. I love you.